Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Just what's life like inside North Korea? We have an exclusive BBC report. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Will Bain. Great to have you with us. It's arguably the most secretive and isolated country on Earth. North Korea has cut itself off from the outside world. Its borders have been sealed for 3 years, officially in response to the COVID pandemic. They haven't been reopened. The BBC's Seoul correspondent, Jean McKenzie, says that food is so scarce there, people are now starving to death. Some of those living in North Korea have risked their lives to tell the BBC about their struggles to survive. And a warning, you may find some of the details in Jean's report distressing.
Where can you see people, sir?
On the main road, there's three people.
Walking?
Yeah, on the rice paddies.
Yeah.
These days, the only way to catch a glimpse of life in North Korea is to come up to the border in South Korea and peer across the river using binoculars, which is what I'm doing now.
One of them's bending down and picking things up to put into a basket.
This is a man we're calling Chan Ho. He lives on the other side of the border. All of our interviewees' words have been voiced by actors.
I work on construction projects. Often we have to work late into the night and I sleep at the site. In our village, five people are starved to death.
At a market near the border works a woman we're calling Myung-suk. Like many North Koreans, she makes her living by selling items smuggled into the country.
Most of the products in the market came from China, but it's empty now. It's become much harder to smuggle things over the border. Our food situation has never been this bad.
These are the cries of an emaciated, unblinking child living through the North Korean famine of the late 1990s, where as many as 3 million people died. But the specter of history has not stopped Kim Jong-un from funneling his limited finances into building nuclear weapons and parading them through the streets of Pyongyang. Last year, he tested a record number of missiles, the cost of which, according to some estimates, could have fed his entire country for the year.
Jean McKenzie, well, the BBC put its findings to the North Korean government. A representative from its embassy in London told us, "The information you have collected is not entirely factual, as it is derived from fabricated testimonies from anti-government forces. The DPRK has always prioritised the interests of the people, even at difficult times, and has an unwavering commitment to the well-being of the people." You're with the Marketplace Morning Report. Let's get you up to speed with the numbers now. European shares slipped on Thursday amid rising fears of an increase in interest rates by the European Central Bank. That decision coming up a little bit later today. Expectations are, though, that the ECB could raise its base rate to 3.5%, the highest level in 22 years. Elsewhere, as we mentioned yesterday, Tokyo's Nikkei remains at a 33-year high, over 33,000 points. The Japanese benchmark has risen 23% this year alone. So, what's going on? We asked Professor Sujiro Takeshita from the University of Shizuoka in the foothills of Mount Fuji.
Well, there's multiple factors that's related. First of all, it was a laggard in comparison to the U.S. and European markets, in spite of the fact that Japanese corporation is filled with cash. They have a very, very high cash position in comparison to the their counterparts in the West, and therefore their price to book is very low, meaning that there is a very good value in these companies. And also, the earnings are likely to be revised up quite nicely because of the weak yen conditions, which gives a lot of breathing room for the Japanese exporters, who's also enjoying stabilized commodity prices and also much more stable supply of things like semiconductors. So those are the major reasons. Mm. And we also know that Bank of Japan is unlikely to change its policy, meaning that, you know, this weekend is likely to continue.
Well, let's pick up on a couple of those areas, just in terms of what companies have done. Have there been changes, or is this just a better market condition?
Actually, both. There is a change that's occurring, and it has been occurring for some time now, but Japanese companies are starting to basically make structural transition to be a lot more aware about, for example, you know, payoff to the shareholders. Japanese has always resorted to stakeholder governance, which doesn't really emphasize shareholders that much. But because of the very high influence by the foreign investors, Japanese companies are virtually being forced to look at treating, you know, these shareholders. So it's becoming a lot more shareholder friendly. That's another very, very strong reason. I think that's, you know, on back of this current trend.
And as you say, that's bringing back foreign investors who have steered clear of Tokyo in the past.
Yes, I think partly because of Corona as well, and also very ambiguous external factors. And Japan is very vulnerable to these, you know, geopolitical problems because, after all, you know, virtually all of our materials are imported. You look at domestic side, we've also got the pent-up demand that's really starting to occur. A bit of a laggard in comparison to the West, but it is starting very clearly, particularly on private consumption side and also on the capital expenditure side, which is the spending by the corporations, which is, well, investing quite heavily on things like rationalization. So you have a very good environment, partly because of structural transition that are starting to really kick in.
And as part of that, strangely, seeing a bit of inflation that the Bank of Japan's been trying to drive for years, finally coming through. Seems odd, doesn't it, when we talk about people trying to control inflation all around the world, but how inflation is actually helping Japanese companies. You know, if you know that the product isn't necessarily going to be cheaper next year, you might actually go out and buy it this year.
Well, you know, the fact is that the Japanese companies have been withholding, for example, you know, the wages for the past 20 years, and we're the only OECD nation that had zero increase of, you know, pay, partly because we had, you know, deflation, as you just pointed out. But because of this external changes that are occurring, obviously we've got the cost push inflation that's occurring. Although it's not as serious as, you know, demand pull inflation that you're seeing in areas like United States and United Kingdom. But that said, that still is, you know, causing big changes on our price structure.
Professor Sujiro Takeshita from the University of Shizuoka. Now, Beyonce has been called many things, including a queen, no less, but as far as we're aware here, never a central bank governor. So it came as news to us when she was blamed in an official release from Danske Bank for causing a spike in inflation in Sweden. Michael Grahn, the bank's chief Sweden economist, tried to explain why.
I think there are certain factors here that were in play to cause this pretty rare event. The first one is she hasn't toured for many years. Apparently, a lot of her fans wanted to be in Stockholm for the start of her world tour. But the other one is that it was probably cheap to buy tickets in Sweden, and the corona is also weak. So I think many saw the opportunity, actually, to get to Sweden to be here. I think what caused this blip, because I think it's a blip in inflation, actually it will come back next month. But the blip is basically caused by the fact that we have big arenas, but they need to stay here also. And the problem is the lack of accommodation, so to say. So I think that is actually what caught our attention. It was that we heard stories that all the fans coming here to Sweden were having problems finding hotels in Stockholm. Actually, they had to move further and further out. So that is essentially the impact it had on inflation. It bid up hotel rates.
Michael Grahn of Danske Bank there. Bruce Springsteen, the next, by the way, to tour Stockholm. So we'll have to see if the boss surely is going to have an impact on Swedish inflation too. With the Marketplace Morning Report, I'm Will Bain from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.